Please be seated. Call the next case.
Judicial Inquiry and Review Commission of Virginia versus Baumgartner, et cetera, and another. Kathleen B. Burnett, Commission Counsel, William B. Grimes, Richard Collins, Robert W. Lawson, Rebecca Gant, Jonathan Merrick, Appellate Counsel.
The court has allotted 40 minutes for this case, 20 minutes per side. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I'm Catherine Burnett here for the Judicial Inquiry and Review Commission. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time.
Did you say 10?
3 minutes.
Three minutes.
Oh, yes,
thank
sir.
You.
The commission found the judges in violation of canons 1, 2A, 2B, and 5A1 by clear and convincing evidence. That the judges had made speeches for a political organization, that they had contributed to a political organization, that they had attended political gatherings, and that they were leaders of a political organization. The evidence that that was based on was largely admitted by the judges before the commission. They admitted that they made financial contributions to the Augusta Coalition, Citizens Coalition, which was a referendum committee registered with the Virginia Department of Elections as a political committee, and also with the IRS as a political organization. They admitted that they worked at a booth at the fair, which was a vote no booth, which was run by the Common Sense Courthouse Solutions, another referendum committee with whom they worked. They admitted that they published an op-ed piece with the assistance of their own coalition's political consulting firm, that they spoke at a Rotary Club, and Judge Baumgartner specifically testified that that speech was the same thing as what was in the op-ed piece that the two judges published. And, in fact, their own evidence showed that that consulting firm assisted the judges with that op-ed piece before they ever spoke at the Rotary Club. In addition to what they both admitted to, Judge Baumgartner additionally admitted that he had worked at a vote no tent that was outside of the courthouse during one of the courthouse tours that was run by the sister organization, the Common Sense Courthouse Solutions. Judge Baumgartner also admitted that he carried around large vote no signs that are in our joint appendix at page 291 and at other places, and that he actually assisted his wife in putting those signs into the ground outside of a town hall meeting. In addition, Judge Baumgartner testified that he also had planned to cater a victory party at his home after the election, and that didn't take place because his attorney called the commission and asked for advice, and based upon that advice for him not to be involved with it, that party was never held. In addition to all of these admissions, Judge Franklin admitted additionally that he had one of the vote no signs at his own home, and also that he attended two of the town hall meetings on the referendum issue. And our evidence before the commission was that he actually sat at those meetings with what I'm going to call the vote no people, who were the Common Sense Courthouse Solutions people. Judge Baumgartner, in addition to carrying the signs outside of that town hall meeting, admitted that he assisted in setting up on an easel at that town hall meeting the materials that were going to be presented by the Vote No Common Sense Courthouse Solutions. Now, the judges denied before the commission that they were leaders of a political organization, but the commission found the evidence was otherwise. First of all, these are judges who have long roots in the county and in the city. For generations of their families, they were well respected and well known as judges, as lawyers. In fact, it's the commission's position that they would have been recognized as leaders of any organization that they were associated with. But with this particular group, the Augusta Citizens Coalition, it was a small core group of 8 members. They represented a quarter of that membership. They were the original financial contributors to that political organization. They were on every working email that went between the consulting firm, the political consulting firm, to those eight core leaders. They were listed on the Courthouse Solutions webpage, which was published, under their endorsements page. Judges Baumgartner and Franklin were listed as having endorsed with the Common Sense Courthouse Solutions were espousing, and that is vote no. They were chosen by their coalition to write these op-ed pieces. They were visible public leaders who were associated with and carried and identified with these vote no signs at the county fair booth, at the tent at the courthouse, and sitting with the vote no people at the town halls. And in addition, at page 398 of the joint appendix, in one of those emails from the consulting group, political consulting group to the members, it actually thanks Judge Franklin for soliciting an op-ed piece to vote no from a local attorney. So the commission believes that the evidence is certainly clear and convincing on their leadership. Now, the judges have asked this court to rewrite Canon 5 to incorporate a limiting definition of political organization that simply is not in the canons. They want this court to say that a political organization is only concerned with a candidate or a party and not with a referendum question on a ballot. We submit that this is a misreading of the canon for two reasons. First, the canon says what it says. It contains absolutely no limiting definition. The phrase political organization should be given its ordinary everyday meaning, a group of people who act politically to affect the outcome of an election. It's certainly broader than a simple candidate or party, but more importantly, the commission believes there's absolutely no room to argue, and in fact, I believe that the judges have conceded this point, that their organization was a political organization. At page 15 of their brief, we believe that they have a dispositive concession. At that page, they say that PACs, political action committees, are inappropriate and proper for the canons to bar. And they say because there is a danger of appearance of impropriety is heightened for a PAC. The commission submits there's no difference between a PAC and a referendum committee. First of all, Virginia law defines a referendum committee as a political committee, 24.2-941.1. In addition, Virginia law has always lumped referendums in with PACs in their election statutes. It was only in 2006 that different committees were separated out and defined differently, a PAC, a referendum committee, but still always as a political committee. The IRS defines the judges' action committee, the Augusta Citizens Coalition, as a political organization. They had to register with the IRS. And in addition, and I think this is instructive, Statute 15.2-1512.2, that's a statute that governs the political activities of local and government employees, not judges, but I think it's very instructive. It certainly tells you what Virginia thinks a political organization is. That statute says that a political party is a group formed to promote candidates or political campaigns, and then it defines political campaigns as activities to promote a political issue, to influence the outcome of an election or a referendum. And I think that's just common sense that that's what that was. And as I said, I don't believe, and the commission doesn't believe, that the judges really contest that anymore, that it's really no different than a PAC. In a very, I think, real way, a referendum committee, just like a PAC, has a candidate. And they also have a party, and that candidate and that party is no. And that's what this was, anything on a ballot. Additionally, the judges asked this court to rule that, okay, even if it is a political organization, that the court should rewrite the canon to make an exception for a referendum about a courthouse move. The commission submits that the court should not do this for several reasons. First, even if the court did that, it would not change the political nature of the activity at issue here that is really so offensive to the judiciary. It would not prevent the political nature of these vote no signs, of the money contributed to the organization to affect the outcome of the election. Or it wouldn't affect the use or misuse of the judicial prestige that was lent to an organization. Also, there's nothing unique about this referendum. Although the judges have tried to make that argument, it's really not any different than any other law-related referendum that are on the ballots in Virginia. All of the referendums that are on ballots in Virginia require the people to vote on them. And that's like anything else on the ballot. In fact, the judges conceded before the commission that it would be improper for a judge in Virginia to participate in activities that were associated with bonds for courthouses, local law options before the public, amendments to the Constitution that are before the public, measures such as whether to elect a school board or whether to elect a mayor, whether to raise taxes for highways, whether to create a police department. They conceded that these would all be improper, and we submit there's no distinction between that and the referendum that they worked on behalf of a political organization. Canon 5A3 has an exception, and the judges urged this court to apply that exception to them. They say because their work was in furtherance of the law, legal system, or the administration of justice. But that's not what Canon 5A3, the exception, says. What it says is for any other political activity that is also in furtherance of measures to promote the law, legal system, and administration of justice. The words any other political act have to have meaning. And in this case, what the commission submits is the plain meaning of that is that any other political act other than those that have already been prohibited in 5A1. Otherwise, those words have no meaning, and otherwise that exception would swallow the rule because it would permit, for instance, any political activity that is barred in Canon 5A1, such as contributing to political organizations, making speeches for, it would allow all of that to take place, supporting candidates, so long as it was in the furtherance of the law, the legal system, and the administration of justice. The canon can't mean that. It has to. Any other political act has to have meaning. Canon 4, also the judges urge, to say, well, Canon 4 permits us to speak, teach, write, in furtherance of the law, legal system, or administration of justice. And that's true. But Canon 5 is a specific limitation on the extrajudicial activities of a judge that are identified in Canon 4. 4 is the general. Canon 5 is the specific. In addition, the commission argues that it would simply be bad policy for this court to rule as the judges have asked. Foremost, it would cede this court's authority to other jurisdictions and other entities to define what your canons mean. It also is important to understand that the commission reads your canons and reads the language of your canons and bases the advice it gives to judges and the charges it brings against judges on your canons as written. The commission believes that if you were to rule as the judges have asked, it will create confusion among the judges as to what Canon 5 means. It could have very real unintended consequences, allowing groups to enlist the help of judges in their causes simply because they have something to do with the law, legal system, administration of justice. Think of a group of lawyers or a bar who has interest for those lawyers now being able to enlist judges to further their interests. Think of all the recusals that would cause if judges were to now decide and fight for somebody else's interests. Or think, for instance, under the judge's definition, why couldn't judges get together and form a group to support candidates whose platform is to make sure that we have good judges appointed, good courthouses built, and anything else like that. I think it would also call into question, quite frankly, the validity of all the other candidates. But at bottom line, it would permit the base politicking that took place in this case. Carrying and using vote no signs, giving money, politicking at county fairs, and at booths that are being run by political organizations. I want to speak for just a moment and very briefly on the First Amendment argument that's been made. The Commission believes that this is a matter that has been waived, and that this Court should apply Rule 525, just as it did in Commission versus Taylor. First, with respect to the Virginia constitutional free speech argument that's been made, there was not one iota word, anything said about that to the Commission. With respect to the First Amendment argument, it was only contained in a reference letter that was presented to the Commission, but the judges themselves never made a motion, briefed, argued, said anything about it. We submit that it would be highly unusual for this Court to reach a constitutional challenge that never was presented in any way, shape, or form before the Commission, whose responsibility it is to make a record for this Court to review. But even if this Court were to reach it, we believe that the constitutional issue is easy to resolve in this case. The judges have literally invited this Court to go out on a judicial limb on this First Amendment issue and make law where it has never been made before. The judges cite not a single authority, and certainly none from the United States Supreme Court, where a regulation on judicial conduct that has nothing to do with a judicial candidate's campaign speech has been looked at under a strict scrutiny standard. It just doesn't exist. The Commission submits to this Court Judge Easterbrook's very well-written opinion in Bauer versus Shepherd and another Seventh Circuit case, Seifert versus Alexander, which makes clear that there is absolutely no strict scrutiny for non-candidate speech. Our canons don't have anything to do with candidate speech. Our judges don't run for election. So that's not an issue here. So if a First Amendment issue were to even be looked at with respect to the judicial canons, it would have to be under the standard of rational basis. Is there any conceivable rational basis for these regulations that are contained in the canons? And the reason why we know that there is, and as the judges have conceded, it's because even in the strict scrutiny cases, the courts have found that a state has not a rational basis. They have a compelling interest in an independent and impartial judiciary. So in light of that, the canons certainly pass the rational basis test, but that would also be true for the more intermediate First Amendment balancing test under the letter carriers case that had to do with the Hatch Act. And that's where you would look and see whether the compelling interest, whether there is this compelling interest in an independent and impartial judiciary would outweigh the judge's interest in speaking, not for themselves, because that's not the charges in this case, but speaking on behalf of a political organization. Frankly, we submit it would even pass strict scrutiny if you had to do that, because these canons are narrowly tailored to further the state's compelling interest and this court's compelling interest in an independent and impartial judiciary, because they don't limit the judge in any way from speaking for himself or his court. They simply limit him from speaking for others. And in this regard, our Canon 5 is virtually identical to the ABA canons, the federal judges' canons, and other states' canons. And none of them have ever been held unconstitutional, as the judges have argued. I'd like to reserve the balance of my time.
Yeah, 56 seconds.
Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Good morning. My name is Robert Lofton. Along with Richard Cullen and Bill Broadus, we represent Judge Bumgardner and Judge Franklin. Mr. Broadus and I will split time this morning, and I will aim to yield to him after approximately 14 minutes. There are three reasons why the Commission's complaint should be dismissed. First, there is no clear and convincing evidence of any violation of the canons. Second, the Commission's interpretation and application of Canon 5A1 is unconstitutional and should be rejected by this Court. The Commission's unconstitutional reading of the canons is easily avoided by adopting the ABA's definition of political organization. And third, the Commission's procedures below violated basic concepts of due process that created an improper and incurable taint over the proceedings. Mr. Broadus and I will address these points in turn. The focus of the Commission's complaint against Judge Bumgardner and Judge Franklin is an alleged violation of Canon 5A1. This Court has never construed or applied this canon or its terms political activity, political organization, political conduct, or political gatherings. The only such interpretation from this Court, from the Commission itself, or from the Judicial Ethics Advisory Committee is Judge Coleman's dissent in Opinion 99-6. The Commission would have this Court define these terms as of or relating to government or the conduct of governmental affairs. Such a definition is contrary to the language and structure of the canons and flies in the face of basic rules of construction. The Commission's definition would render Canon 4 and Canon 5 redundant of each other. Various provisions of Canon 4, notably Canon 4D, already address a judge's ability to interact with the executive and legislative branches of government. Moreover, Canon 3B9 allows a judge to speak to the public to explain procedures of the court. Canon 5 should be read to apply only to partisan activity in support of a political party or a political candidate. Stated differently, the analysis should be, first, is the conduct political? If it is it inappropriate? And if it is inappropriate, is it nevertheless covered by the exception of Canon 5A3? The Commission's suggestion to adopt the broadest definition of political does not allow for the operation of the word inappropriate. The Commission reads this word out of Canon 5 and fails to recognize that even if the conduct is political, it nevertheless may be appropriate. Thus, what does the canon mean when it says inappropriate? Only partisan activities on behalf of a political party or a political candidate for office. Other political activities are allowed civic engagement. So as a general rule, the prescriptions of Canon 5 should not apply to issue referenda, which are nonpartisan and simply require a voter to vote yes or no. The prohibitions of Canon 5 specifically and especially should not apply to a courthouse relocation referendum, where the people must exercise a responsibility and power specifically reserved to them under the Constitution of Virginia. If a judge is allowed to speak to the executive and the judiciary on matters concerning the administration of justice, it is appropriate for a judge to speak directly to the people when they are exercising a legislative function reserved to them under the Constitution of Virginia. This construction of Virginia's of Canon 5 also is supported by the ABA Model Code of Judicial Conduct, which defines political organization as a political party or other group sponsored or affiliated with a political party, the principal purpose of which is to further the election or appointment of a candidate for office. This definition is used by 34 states, the District of Columbia, and the Code of Conduct for federal judges. Virginia is one of only 8 states that does not have a terminology section in its canons. The court should adopt the ABA's definition of political organization as a definition to be used to interpret and apply Canon 5. The Commission begrudgingly recognizes that other states have modified their definition over time, their brief on pages 26 to 28. Where they recognize that Florida and Arizona have modified their canons and have altered prior ethics opinions after adopting the ABA's definition of political organization. What the Commission fails to realize is that this is exactly what the court did when it accepted the rationale of Judge Coleman's dissent in Opinion 99-6. This is also what the court did when it withdrew the Judicial Ethics Advisory Committee opinion in 08-1 regarding the ability of judges to serve as ministers. The guilt by association rationale of the commission in this very case is very similar to the now withdrawn opinion of the ABA 108-1. The ABA's definition best fits with the current language and structure of Canon 5 and allows Canon 5 to be harmonized with Canon 4's allowance for Virginia judges to use their expertise to serve their communities. The ABA's definition also allows the court to avoid the constitutional issues created by the Commission's suggested interpretation. As an initial matter, we disagree that these arguments were waived. We think they were preserved in the judge's answers to the Commission, as well as in the memoranda that we submitted on behalf of the judges. And then finally, in Mr. Hurd's letter, which was accepted without objection as an exhibit before the Commission. But assuming for the sake of argument that they were waived, this court nevertheless is required to construe and apply the canons consistent with constitutional requirements. The preamble to the canons is very clear. With regard to the Constitution of Virginia, we recognize that Eliot held that Article 1, Section 12 of the Constitution of Virginia is coextensive with the First Amendment, at least in the context of true threats. But Eliot did not cite, discuss, or overturn Luthan, and we have a disagreement over how to pronounce that case, which is a precedent that will impact how the court should interpret and apply not only Canon 5, but legislative acts of the General Assembly. By properly defining political organization and the related terms in Canon 5 as only concerning partisan activities on behalf of political party, political candidate, the court may then review and analyze how the canons might need to be amended in light of Luthan and other precedent from this court, and also to determine whether the canons might need to be amended in light of Article 1, Section 12's command that any citizen may speak, write, and publish his sentiments on all subjects. With regard to the First Amendment, while it has not stated whether speech restrictions for sitting judges are subject to strict scrutiny, the Supreme Court of the United States has recognized that it is a rare case that a state demonstrates that a speech restriction may satisfy strict scrutiny. Here, the speech restriction advocated by the Commission would be subject to strict scrutiny and would flunk. Judge Baumgartner and Judge Franklin spoke on a public issue concerning the relocation of the Augusta County Courthouse. It is undisputed that speech on public issues enjoys the fullest protection of the First Amendment. As such, any restriction on the judge's speech should be subject to strict scrutiny. The Commission then bears a very difficult burden in order to demonstrate that its arguably legitimate interest in protecting the impartiality of the judicial system outweighs the judge's First Amendment rights. And I say arguably regarding the Commission's purported interest in preserving impartiality because the Commission advances what the Supreme Court in White called a paternalistic concept of impartiality. The Commission says that a judge loses impartiality anytime he publicly takes sides in a matter. But this concept of impartiality was specifically rejected by the Supreme Court in White. A proper definition of impartiality is focused on bias for or against a party. It is not focused on the judge's views or statements on issues. But assuming for the sake of argument that there is a legitimate interest advanced by the Commission, the broad definition of political advocated by the Commission is not narrowly tailored. The Commission's reading of Canon 5 is over-inclusive, banning nonpartisan judicial speech on issues and thus depriving Virginians of a judge's input, especially on issues where a judge might have particular knowledge or expertise. The Commission's reading of Canon 5 is also under-inclusive and vague, in that the Commission concludes that Judge Baumgartner and Judge Franklin could make the same exact comments and statements that they made if they had made them to the Augusta County Board of Supervisors. Finally, in addition to being viewpoint discrimination, the Commission makes clear that its interpretation and application of Canon 5 violates the judge's right to expressive association. According to the Commission, the real problem is the fact that the judges express their opinions with like-minded individuals in Augusta County and Stanton. But the Supreme Court has repeatedly made clear, going back to the NAACP case out of Alabama in 1958, that the freedom of speech includes the right to engage in association for the advancement of that speech. Here, speaking out on a courthouse relocation issue does not raise the possibility of bias or prejudice against a party. Thus, there is no compelling interest that is narrowly tailored, and this court should reject the Commission's interpretation of Canon 5 and avoid the constitutional issues it creates. Finally, various roles played by the Commission, various roles played by counsel to the Commission have tainted these proceedings and denied Judge Baumgardner and Judge Franklin due process. There is no provision in the Code of Virginia, the Rules of Professional Responsibility, or the Canons of Judicial Conduct that allow an individual to serve as both a prosecutor and an advisor to the same agency or hearing body in the same proceeding. JURC's rules appear to be unique among all Virginia state agencies, and they improperly allow counsel to the Commission to have access that was denied by Judge Baumgardner and Judge Franklin to the Commission itself. The prejudice to Judge Baumgardner and Judge Franklin justifies dismissal of the complaint. For these reasons, Judge Baumgardner and Judge Franklin would ask the complaint be dismissed. I will yield the balance of my time to Mr. Broadus.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, I am Bill Broadus and I am here on behalf of the respondent judges. I wish to briefly address three points. First, the construction and interpretation of the canons, then the First Amendment issue, and then the due process issue. With respect to the construction of the canons and their interpretation, we urge the court to focus on the commentary of the Canon 5. That commentary makes it clear why it is permissible for a judge to participate by voting in a political primary, but he cannot attend a political gathering. According to the commentary, the distinction is the primary does not involve registration by political party, it does not involve a loyalty or party oath, and it does not involve a pledge of future support for a party or person. Those criteria, we submit, define the meaning of the term political as used in the canons. And that criteria certainly falls differently than what conduct was engaged in by these judges. Now, if the Commission's interpretation is upheld, we submit it would be inappropriate for a judge to attend a meeting of the Virginia Bar Association. That is certainly an association, and a good portion of its program is concerning or pertaining to government. But that is a result that is so far from the practice and common understanding of the term that it cannot be upheld. Common understanding of the term, the only evidence concerning it, are the exhibits submitted on behalf of the respondent judges. They focus on a very narrow meaning of the term, consistent with the commentary and consistent with the federal canons as well. The Commission's interpretation would also render Canon 4D3 a nullity. That makes it clear that a judge can be a leader of a civic organization designed to promote the administration of justice. We all know as a practical matter, a leader is expected to give money. He's expected to do a lot of things. There is a caveat that says that that has to be consistent with the other canons. But surely they wouldn't say it's permissible to be a director of a civic organization if he can't engage in the purpose of that civic organization to promote the administration of justice. Now, with respect to the First Amendment issue, the Commission has conceded that it is permissible for the judges to have political views and to express those views publicly. They state that the judges made a mistake when they engaged in what the Commission describes as the machinery of political organizations. That means, as a practical matter, that it would have been permissible for these judges to design a vote no sign and place it on their property. But they could not carry their wife's vote no sign and place it on their jointly owned property. It would have been permissible for Judge Baumgardner to erect a tent at the county fair and invite people to come into that tent and hear his views on the referendum. But he couldn't go sit in someone else's tent and express the very same views. It would have been permissible for him to hire a printer and print handbills and distribute those handbills, but he couldn't donate the same money to an organization for the same purpose. We submit that the Constitution cannot support such absurd distinctions. As Justice Harlan, for the unanimous Supreme Court of the United States in the Patterson case, stated, the First Amendment right of association is inextricably tied to the First Amendment right of the freedom of speech, because association often makes speech more powerful. And that is the situation here. I might also add that that makes the public's right to know more effectively addressed. With respect to the due process point, we submit that the Commission and its counsel have violated the constitutional guarantees of due process. We contended that the counsel engaged in inappropriate roles prohibited by the LEOs of the State Bar. In response, on page 11 of the Commission's response to dismiss to in opposition to the judge's demur and motion to dismiss, counsel for the Commission stated that she does not prosecute the case. Rather, in a Commission hearing, she is presenting to the judge, that is the respondents, the Commission's own case where misconduct already has been found sufficient to bring a charge, so that the judge may present whatever evidence and arguments he sees fit to the Commission to persuade it not to find a violation well-founded. So, as a practical matter, before the judge is given notice, before the judge has an opportunity to take a first swing at the plate, a finding has already been made. We submit this process not only violates due process, but it violates the judges participating on the Commission's obligations under the canons to refrain from ex parte participation in contacts. Because the Commission's counsel, with whom it has an attorney-client relationship, has been directed to investigate, bring the fruits of that investigation back to the Commission, and it then relies on that to make a determination before the judge has an opportunity to participate. The roles of counsel also violate the LEOs. So for these reasons, those stated in our papers and in the amicus briefs filed on behalf of these judges, we urge this court to hold that these judges fulfilled the duty imposed on them by the canons to participate in activities to further the administration of justice, and to hold that they did nothing improper. Accordingly, we ask that the complaint be dismissed. Thank you.
Ms. Burgett?
May it please the court, with respect to the due process argument that's been made, the only motion that was made before the commission was a motion that the commission not go into deliberations with the presence of its counsel unless the judges and their counsel were present. That motion was denied, and then at the end of the hearing, counsel for the judges asked the commission, was your counsel present during your deliberations? And the commission informed the judge's counsel that no, counsel was not present. And so to the extent that the argument's being made now about some due process violation regarding prosecuting and being a counselor, that simply was not part of a motion before the commission, and we would submit that that has been waived. For all the reasons that we've argued in that brief, we believe that the judge's judicial prestige was misused and they allowed it to be misused, that this court should rule in favor of the commission and impose a sanction and censure. Thank you.
Ms. Burnett, Mr. Laughlin, and Mr. Broaddus, thank you for your arguments. Call the next case.
Full of Executive Center versus Norfolk Southern Railway Company, Charles R. Allen.